I'm Richard Evans from EMC Arts, and this is the Arts Forward podcast, where a guest or two joins me to explore the challenges facing the arts sector right now, to do things differently, to do things they've never done before. In this monthly podcast, we look at stories of experimentation and success from innovative arts organisations around the country, and talk to leaders and organisers who are developing new programmes, capacities and know-how in order to lead productive change in response to unprecedented challenges. Here with me to discuss ways in which audience development strategies relate to artistic work is David Shimotakahara, Artistic Director of Groundworks Dance Theatre, and Charles Fee, Producing Artistic Director of Great Lakes Theatre. Both are leaders of organisations participating in Engaging the Future, a programme developed with the Cleveland Foundation. The programme aims to stimulate and support members of the Cleveland arts community to think and act differently in their approaches to engaging the participation of younger and more culturally diverse segments of society in their programming and their organisational structures. Thank you for joining me and welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Richard.
David and Charlie, we invited you here today because we've had a lot of shared and individual conversations about engaging audiences and participants in your work. Audience engagement is a term that's thrown around arts organisations a lot, but it means many different things to different people. And there's certainly a wide variety of reactions to the idea. For some artistic leaders, I know audience engagement strategies always come after the artistic decisions have been made, as a secondary concern. For others, the two are much more closely linked, with audiences invited to engage as work is made, or to have input to some aspects of decision-making. So, Charlie, Great Lakes Theatre has recently moved into a newly revamped and reconstructed theatre, and you offer a range of pre- and post-show programmes. I have three related questions for you. What sorts of activities do you offer? How have these been going? And is that the full extent of your organisation's definition of audience engagement?
When we designed our current theatre, which is the Hanna Theatre, we began with a 1,000-seat proscenium arch theatre that was built in 1921 for a very different aesthetic than ours, and an aesthetic that I would say, for our topic, was less engaging just by design of the space than ours is today. So our first job in that space was to break through the proscenium arch and build a thrust stage, a platform stage that reached out into the audience so that we immediately broke down, the barrier of the proscenium arch and began to look at this as a way that we could engage the audience in a more visceral, more immediate way. This was very specifically part of our goal in reaching our younger audiences, student audiences. Because, you know, for a student audience, distance of any kind creates a separation from the event that is disengaging. So we've created, as you mentioned, a series of pre- and post-show kinds of events. The design of the theater it creates a social event that takes place within the theater auditorium. There is a very small lobby, but we get you through that lobby quickly and into the theater space.
With your drinks.
We put the bar in the theater, right? The idea was to break, again, that barrier of the social event taking place within the theater. Then we decided to do several things with that. One was to create lots of variety in seating so that you'd have traditional seats, box seats, banquette seats, seats at a bar, seats in a lounge area that are unassigned and are $15 for any performance. So you had lots of ways to watch the play. Then we open our house an hour and a half before the performance to engage the audience. We have food that they can buy, they can have a snack, etc. So they're also invited to watch all of the pre-show prep of the theater, from just the lighting call and sound call to, you know, to dance calls, fight calls, etc. So that the audience from the beginning of the evening is, you know, made very physically aware of the performers in the space and the theatricality of the space.
And how's that going, Charlie? Are people turning up for that? And who's turning up?
They do. And I'll tell you that at first, I think people are surprised. They think they're in the space and they shouldn't be, except that the bar's there, so somehow they're confused by that, right? Audiences love to see essentially backstage. They love to get a glimpse of how this process works and culminates in this highly designed and, controlled within a second of its life piece of theater. So every way we have looked to break down that barrier prior to the performance, we've found to be a very healthy change. And audiences come to see them.
And what about after the shows, Charlie? Do you let them straight out, or are you trying to make a longer experience of this whole event?
Well, there it is, right? The entire goal is to create a total experience for the audience. From the minute they leave their cars behind and enter downtown Cleveland on the street, hopefully, and come into the theater, you're creating an experience, and that's essentially what you are selling to an audience, and that's what your job is artistically. So we have pre-show discussions as well, and those are the most effective and most sought-after part of the whole process. People want to talk, and they want to hear about plays before they see it. After the play, we do the same thing. We don't do the traditional talkback with actors coming out on stage to speak to the audience. What we do is we invite the actors out into the house to have a glass of wine after the show. Audience is invited to stay and talk, have dessert, cup of coffee. We play music in the house. We have live music that we local bands that come in. So that, again, the event doesn't just end with the curtain, but you have a curtain and then the potential of engagement, discussion.
Great. But let me turn to David. Mm. At Groundworks, David, you have the goal of presenting outstanding contemporary dance and adventurous choreography to dance lovers and to neophytes alike. What's your view on this audience engagement terminology, and how does it currently play out in how you present your performances?
I think of engagement as the full spectrum of the ways we can offer people from diverse backgrounds and with varying degrees of experience with dance sort of different points of entry, different and interesting points of entry. And it is, as Charlie said, I think all of the things that you can layer in around your artwork, your art, and all of the things that you take into consideration about how they experience that, both before, during, and after the performance. Charlie mentions, the before, the pre-curtain experience, and we don't have the kind of control that he has in the wonderful Hannah Theater that they've designed. We're in many, many different types of venues that are the atmosphere or the environment is not really under our control. But I think back, when we started the organization, we started the company. One of the things that we really looked at was taking all of the unpredictability, all of the factors we don't have under our control, scarce resources, how do we make that work for us in a way that it becomes something that actually identifies the company? So we began to perform in a lot of non-traditional spaces, and there was this intimacy factor which I really craved. And going to these non-traditional spaces, I think, really changed people's relationship to how they could then experience the dance.
And what sorts of spaces are these, David, that you're talking about?
Well, we performed in churches, performed in public spaces, and we performed in industrial spaces that we converted into theaters. And they were always we always created a very, very intimate environment. It wasn't about size. It was really about getting the audience to be up close and very personal to the action of the dance. We also, because of that kind of setup, we didn't have a proscenium set up, a curtain that separated the dancers from the audience before the show started. So we just began to develop a format where we would leave the stage open. The dancers could warm up, and that's really a part of dance is really the dancers need to be warming up right up until the curtain goes up.
Yes.
So often we didn't have auxiliary space for them to do that, so they just did that out in the open. And that became a kind of signature of the company, and people, now I know I've heard from many audience members, they'll come early just to watch the dancers and sort of how they prepare for show. And Charlie is absolutely right. You know, it breaks down that barrier, that wall. I mean, you want the anticipation of the start of the show, but you don't want that separation to be there. And I think that really helps.
It sounds, David, as though you're not a proponent of you or other choreographers or dancers coming out and talking with the audience in advance or doing post-show activities with the dancers?
We have done post-show discussions, but I think with dance, my feeling is it needs to happen in other ways. To be really, really effective. I mean, you can have a post show, and people tend to ask the same kind of questions, and because they really don't know even sort of how to address their experience. And I feel that needs to be somehow facilitated in a different way.
What kind of ways have you tried?
Well, this is our task. I think is to look at how we can open up. Access to more understanding about the process, more understanding about the experience of dance. I think dance is a little more of a stretch for people in general, because there isn't a language that they necessarily can understand or feel they can understand.
Right, it's very different from the English language plays that Charlie's company obviously is all about. But let me just take you in a slightly different direction. There's a lot of discussion about the rise of a participatory culture. Do you think there is a desire from audiences to play a more participatory role? Charlie?
Well, you know, Richard, yes, we hear about this a lot. And I've certainly done shows, and I bet David has done some as well, that have direct participation from the audience. You know, and it's typically when you're at that, when that's happening, you've become a circus, right? And that's fine. And some plays have that ability to be circus-like. And so great, that can work. But once you've done that, once the audience has engaged in direct participation with the aesthetic event, it has completely, from my point of view, changed the whole idea of the piece of art. It's no longer a truly aesthetic experience because the aesthetic distance has been completely shattered, and now you're in the piece of art. I think there are some audiences that really like this. I think it's no secret that almost all of us in the theater, and probably dancers are the same, this is the one thing none of us can stand. The second we're in an audience where there's audience participation taking place, you will see every actor just crouch down in their seat, slink back and try and disappear. Because we find this so threatening when we're in audiences.
And yet actors and theater companies talk so much about the fourth wall and how to pierce it.
Yes.
And now we get it pierced and you crouch in your seat. You don't want it.
When we're audience members.
Okay.
Right? But there's, of course, a large, as you use the term, continuum here. There are all kinds of participation, right? Every audience is participating in everything we do. Mm-hmm. I mean, because that's how we measure engagement, is their participation. We say to ourselves, did that laugh land? And if the laugh landed, everyone in the room participated. Or we say, you know, the classic, right? You could hear a pin drop. Well, that is an extraordinary level of engagement and participation from an audience. So we're in a business that is, by definition, participatory to a certain level.
There are, of course, theater companies that cast community members in some of their plays. There are theater companies that commission work from the local community. There are ways in which we might begin to shift the control over the aesthetic process, as you say, from the artistic director or the actors to a more communal one. Is there anything in that area that interests you?
Well, you know, Richard, we've done every one of those things, right? It's absolutely valid. It's just a very different aesthetic than what we're creating. I don't think that one is more interesting. Well, yes, I do. I shouldn't lie. I'm not very interested in the participatory part. But having said all that, right, we do then go out into the community with a very large educational outreach program virtually every school day of the year. And we are creating participatory work directly with those students. That work couldn't exist if it wasn't participatory. And there's a place where I find that deeply engaging.
And do you think that commentators who say that a younger generation is much more interested in having some role in creating the experience, having a participatory experience, that kind, are they wide of the mark, or do you sense pressure in that direction?
I'll be provocative about this. I think they're wide of the mark in this sense. I don't think it's younger audiences. I'll tell you who wants participation. Baby boomers. My 16-year-old daughter, does she like to participate in things? Yes, but I got to tell you something about kids. I spend a huge amount of time with young audiences. Young audiences are the most frightened of group participation. The environment for them is so fraught with danger, social danger, right? That to get a group of high school kids or junior high school kids to make a peep of sound in a performance, even if you're directly engaging them, is very, very difficult.
And let me just ask you, David, given this Charlie's provocations and this question of directing engagement and participation, do you sense that's a push coming from younger audiences? Do you respond to that with any opportunities for direct participation, or is it not part of the landscape of the work as you develop it?
Well, I don't see participation as necessary, particularly as it relates to the performing arts. I don't think that it necessarily needs to be equated with main stage participation, nor do I think that all individuals desire that kind of participation in order to feel creatively engaged or included. So I think it's really a question of sort of like, well, you know, I think young people want access to ways that they can be creative themselves. And I don't think that necessarily means that they want to create with you, but they may want tools, or they may want guidance, or they may want some form for helping them learn more about whatever it is that you're doing in a way that also is participatory for them.
And what about your thinking, each of you, as you plan your artistic seasons and as you think about individual works and productions, is there, do you give thought to audience engagement as part of how you plan the artistic work of your organization overall?
Everything we do, of course. I can't imagine. David and I were just talking about the work that he's creating right now. And I can't imagine, or, you know, I'll let him speak for himself, that when you chose the composer, that you weren't thinking about work that would engage your audience. We, David and I, are, you know, we pick the plays and dance pieces that we're going to create in a season, right? So one of our jobs, aside from directing a piece, is to choose the programming. Well, in choosing the programming, I'm only thinking, what will be interesting? What will be engaging? What will be provocative? What will stimulate our audience? Not, what is it that I want to work on in spite of what anyone might want to see, right? So it's always a byplay. So we're looking now for forms, right, structures that will allow us this discussion with the audience and allow those people in the audience that, you know, that choose to come to that sort of thing, that want to come into a pre-show discussion. We talked about that earlier. I think the pre-show discussion is the most interesting part, more interesting than the post-show, for exactly the reasons that David talked about. I think it's really invasive to an audience 2 seconds after a major work of art to say, hey, well, what'd you think about it? Let's talk about it. Although, if you create a social atmosphere, they will start talking among themselves. So it's in those pre-show discussions where we're asking them, you know, aside from talking about the play and the playwright and the production, we're asking them about what interests they have. What are they liking about our work? What are they not liking? What do they want to see? How can they challenge us with what they want to see? Now, you know, yes, it's market research. Do we act on it in some very, disciplined way? No. We just listen to it and we talk among the team, you know, the artists and the staff about what we're hearing from the audience.
And how do you get to know what those who aren't currently attending might be interested in so you could draw them in too? Because we're all talking here about getting more diverse, more generationally, ethnically diverse audiences that better reflect the local community. How do you reach out beyond those walkabouts?
I know there is the million-dollar question. Now, we've tried some little techniques like, giving our audience members a free ticket to see the play again if they bring someone. So if they bring a friend, then we'll let them see it again. Now, an awful lot of people want to do that, more than you would think, because they've seen something. They were knocked out by it, let's hope. And they say, oh, my God, I wish I could bring so-and-so, right? Often what they'll do is they'll buy their own ticket and give the free ticket to the friend. So there's someone that was contacted, you know, sort of through our audience that we had no contact with. Well, corporate groups come often, right? We've got a sponsor, and we're constantly encouraging them to bring groups, right? Client development, you know, sort of give back something to your employees for a whole series of reasons. Parties are essentially created that begin in the theater with drinks and hors d'oeuvres, and they see the play, and they get a little backstage or something, you know, a little discussion with the artist, something more, right? Value added. So that participation then is not direct participation in the art. It's the participation of I'm going with a group of people to do something. And that's a very different kind of notion of participation. And I think that that can be an incredibly rewarding thing for people, to go in groups to events. And I don't just mean the bus group that comes from, you know, the faraway suburb. I mean a group of people that are formed in some other way, right? So we bring groups of lawyers through the ACLU, for instance, because we're discussing a topic of justice. But now I want to talk about neighborhoods, right? And I want to talk about, you know, this residential idea. Mm-hmm. That's something we are going to test, and we're going to start to test it this year. How do we do it? We don't know.
I think, you know, as we look forward, there's so many ways that I think we can start to help people, I think, make those connections to different parts of what we do. It's not just their experience in the production or in the theater. It's about how we create work. It's about the idea of finding new ways of coming at, solving creative problems. You know, what I'm really interested in is constantly keeping our audience curious about what it is we're trying to do. We have to be caretakers. We have to be good curators in a way that we have to sort of constantly challenge them or reward them or intensify their curiosity in interesting ways and bring new things for them.
And do you have ideas about how you might do that or how you might start doing that?
I think our mission is to create new work. And I feel that, you know, there may be room for us to become a kind of exchange or a kind of channel for that idea. You know, it's not so much about just dance, creating in dance, but you know, we act as a catalyst, but not necessarily to bring them into our particular creative process or to teach them how to become dancers. But it's a different relationship.
David Shimo Takahara is the artistic director of Groundworks Dance Theatre. And Charles Fee is the producing artistic director of Great Lakes Theatre. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks, David.
Thanks for listening. This is the monthly Arts Forward podcast. You can check out more on our newly launched website that features multimedia profiles of innovative organizations, a blog, this podcast series, and much more at www.artsforward.org. That's ARTSFWD.org. I'm Richard Evans of EMC Arts in New York.